Hey, this is Brandon Crawford from the San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, September 25th, 2017, and this is episode 129 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad King, and joining me tonight, he is safe and secure. I think that the hurricane didn't affect him too much, other than his spirit, maybe. Yeah. Eric Nathanson, how you doing, Eric?
The spirit, I'm doing well, but the spirit, she may be a little broken after Irma. We were going to record. I want to say, to be fair, we were going to record a couple weeks ago, but I was still on recovery from Irma. She was a ferocious beast. I don't know how y'all do it in California with earthquakes, but I do know now how they do it in Florida with hurricanes, and I can say I'm a Floridian. I've lived through, and it was one of the most intense nights of my life, and I don't ever want to do it again. When they evacuate, I think I'm just going to go on vacation for a few days and just come back and hope that everything's okay.
Well, that's the beauty about earthquakes, is that there's no warning. It just happens, so...
you know, to me, that's not a beauty, that's like unexpected. At least with the hurricane you can prepare. Like earthquakes, they scare me a little bit because they could happen out of nowhere.
Absolutely. I mean, you could just be taking a crap or being in a under a glass chandelier, or driving down the Bay Bridge, whatever. So it's one of those things that we live with in California, but still, that being said, even though that you guys have warnings in Florida or wherever hurricanes or tornadoes can hit, it doesn't really lessen the impact because, the structures are still there, the property is still there, so it's still an issue. So we're thankful from our TortureCast crew that you are safe and sound and that it didn't devastate you guys, so... I know a lot of people are going through a lot of adversity right now. I work for the National Marine Sanctuary System, and we have a sanctuary in the Florida Keys. And so we still have a lot of people down there that, number one, even to this day, still have not gotten to their homes. Their offices are pretty battered, and a lot of the employees' homes are destroyed. So it's still not fully realized exactly what the impact is, but... the reports coming back right now are not so good. So, these are people who work for the federal government, many other people in the Keys and the rest of Florida and Texas, mind you, aren't in those financial situations in which, they can recover from, insurance and other things from the federal government. So
it's Keys, tough, man. Yeah. The Keys got hit bad. Like I didn't lose power. You know what I mean? I'm one of the fortunate.
Yeah, it's crazy that you didn't lose power. I mean, so many millions of people lost power in Florida, and you didn't.
Well, right, and that's I'll tell you why, and it's very ironic. We lost power two nights before she came. And so when the electric company came out to fix that power that night, they must have reinforced it or done whatever, code they needed to for that. And then we didn't lose power through Irma. We flickered a few times, but not at all. And it was just really weird timing that we lost power a couple days before, because we were outside joking about how we hoped we don't lose power. We didn't lose power during Matthew, and then boom, we lost power. And so I think when they fixed it, it was weird. I felt like it jinxed us. I was like so scared about Irma for the next 2 days, because I was like, oh man, this is ominous. This isn't good. And then, we really didn't have it that bad. I had local weather people. I mean, we had howling winds, and it was scary There's things and debris. There's a McDonald's down the street. The sign is shredded. It looks like it is from war-torn Beirut. Like, that's how shredded the sign is. So it was absolutely just it's fierce, and there's a lot of the keys. I totally get that those people, not even the offices, but their homes, the keys seem to get it worse because, I mean, that's right around where the landfall happens. That's where the strongest winds were. So it was a heck of a thing, Irma. So Irma treated me nicely, though, thankfully, in the sense that I don't have any huge problems coming out of it. My life was slightly inconvenienced, you know what I mean? That's it.
Yeah, how far were you from the eye, by the way?
I was like, by the time the eye rushed up through the middle of the state, we were about 20, 30 miles tops to the, let's see, the eye was Polk border there. So we were to the east of it. So we're on the right side of it. And if you're going through a hurricane, there's different quadrants to the hurricane. And the upper right and lower right quadrant are the worst of them. They're the ones that will spin off. The upper right spins off the tornadoes like crazy, and it did that for the outer counties along the shore for the hours leading up to Irma really hitting us. And then when it gets to the bottom, it's the strong winds, and then finally passes through. And we were on the right side the entire time, like right real close to the eye. The eye like spread out at one point. It just kind of rushed up the state, and that's why amazingly you saw how deep it went into the United States and past Atlanta. And even farther, I lost track of it after that because, you know, I was still around here. There was, you know, when I went out on around the town, there was billboards all blown off, signage blown off. There are trees that are near our building that were stripped. And I'm talking like big, like oak trees, not like a palm tree. The leaves were just stripped. There's like a rows of trees, and the first row of the trees is stripped, and the rest of them are protected because of that first row getting stripped. It's kind of fascinating to see some of that stuff. Yeah, it really is. So there's signs, and there's like, you know, stuff by the road and debris everywhere. Debris is the biggest concern, you know, because debris is a unknown. So even when you're going through it, you know, we had our window blocked, but you hope nothing flies through debris-wise, and you hope your roof doesn't go off. Other than that, you can't do much else but, you know, huddle and hope, and we got lucky.
Well, thank God you guys are okay, and a lot of your neighbors are. You know, it's a huge thing here in the U.S. with climate change and, you know, the stuff that's been going on. But, you know, talking about climate change, let's just segue into the Giants. the Giants had a hurricane of their own in the form of the Dodgers, you know, storming through the West and clinching it for their fifth division title in a row. And, you know, what's really frustrating about this is, you know, we can all laugh and point at our Dodger friends in the fact that the Giants won three, you know, world championships in 5 years, and they only won the West one time in those 3 years that they won it. The Dodgers in the past 4 years where they've won the West haven't even won an NL championship. So it's kind of fun to point the finger at them. But the fact of the matter is, here they are sitting with the best record in the NL, clinching the West again. And, you know, the Giants are competing with the Phillies for the worst record in all of baseball. So it's a very odd position for the Giants to be in. But, you know, it was a little hard because I can remember when I always wanted the Giants to clinch a playoff spot or kick the Dodgers out or win the West with the Dodgers in town. And that's exactly what the Dodgers did to the Giants. Now, I know if they don't win the World Series, it really doesn't mean anything because if they get kicked out, they get kicked out, and it doesn't matter. But the fact remains that the Giants lost to the Dodgers, and they clinched in Dodger Stadium. And it was just, it's just rough, man. I mean, just watching that live, it's got to be hard for those players to sit there and go, God damn it, this is the fifth consecutive division title these guys have gotten, and here we are losing to them. You know, how do you think that whole scene went down, Eric?
Well, I watched that game. I watched the Dodgers series. I didn't watch the Kershaw game, but that, like, I don't mind seeing. I mean, we all knew how good the Dodgers were, it's a lot easier to take than like Steve Finley.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that. It's not, you know, what was it, Charlie Culberson last year?
Yeah.
You know, when the Giants were good, at least the Giants were crappy at this moment. Because you're right. Crappy. I mean, you know, if they'd, you know, clinched it against the Giants with the Giants chasing them. But the fact of the matter is that there's so many good teams between the Dodgers and the Giants. I mean, for the fans, I think it's great for the fans. I think it's great for Dodger fans. They get to, yeah, you know, so much better than the Giants and da-da-da-da-da. You know, and we kind of have to eat it for a little bit because, you know, we've probably gloated quite a bit over the last few years.
Oh,
so it's okay,
and
to,
deservedly right. So, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's okay to be humble for a little bit and, you know, while the Giants eat crap and compete with the Phillies, like you said. And if the Giants win tonight, the Phillies and them will be tied. So it's entirely possible. But I don't mind that they did. Apparently they have other things going on with them. I guess Puig got in trouble for something, and Roberts is talking about benching him. I didn't even see what it was. But, like, I'm glad that the Dodgers won, as weird as it sounds, instead of, like, Arizona losing and then the Giants beating the Dodgers. And then they would have had to, like, you know, awkwardly celebrate out on the field, you know, even though they just lost the baseball game. Because... I mean, imagine that. That's what the scenario would have been. Had Arizona lost their game that night, they had like a 15-14 bang-em-around game against the Marlins at the same time. But they started their game a half hour early, so it was possible their game could have ended sooner. And then the Dodgers would have been NL West champs if they lost, regardless of what they did. So had the Giants won, it wouldn't have mattered. I mean, I don't mind that. The five division titles is only been done like five times in the divisional era. Something like the Phillies recently, the Yankees in the 90s. The Braves, and I think somebody in the 70s. Maybe the Red Machine, somebody like that. I don't know. But, you know, I mean, that's impressive in and of itself. But when it comes to the Dodgers, yeah, I talk them up, but I'm from Missouri. They got to show me something. You know, enough of this getting to the playoffs year after year after year. You know, it's not a big deal for them to do anything if they're just going to crap the bed every time. Because a Giants fan will win when the Dodgers lose in the playoffs this year.
You know, that's the beauty of the playoffs, is when the Dodgers are in and the Giants aren't, they have the first round, the second round, the divisional championship, or the championship series and the World Series to lose. So, you know, many hurdles for the Dodgers to overcome to win the World Series with 10 teams going in. So but the Dodgers that are, you know, look, the fact is, you know, the Dodgers are there, the Giants aren't, and it's been a very frustrating 2017. Let's move on. So Vogelsong had an interesting retirement ceremony a couple of weeks ago, or about a week ago, with the Giants, and I actually was kind of confused because when it first came out over media, I thought he was actually going to start. They said they signed him to a one-day contract. He's going to retire on the mound. I was like, wait a minute. Is he going to start? And I was thinking, there's no way any team would ever do that. But then I thought, well, the Giants season is over, so why wouldn't they do that? As it turns out, it was purely ceremonial. He went out and warmed up with like 5, 6, 7 pitches. And then was, quote, you know, called out of the game by Bochy to be replaced by, you know, the starter for the day. And, you know, he handed the ball over to Boch and tipped his cap. But so it was a nice ceremony. You know, he started the year in spring training with the Minnesota Twins, and he tried to hang on, and it didn't work out. And we all know that he was a marginal Major League Baseball player at this point, if, you know, at best. But my God, what he gave to the San Francisco Giants for so many years is absolutely incredible, and we will never forget it. 3 wins in the postseason, which doesn't sound like a tremendous amount over their 3 postseasons, but each and every win was critical to their success.
Huge.
Just absolutely critical to winning their 3 world championships. It's incredible the confluence of factors in performances from you know, has-beens, washed-ups, no-namers, at, you know, average baseball players that the Giants relied on to win their three world championships. And Ryan Vogelsong is absolutely the epitome of one of those players. And for the Giants to honor him in such a fashion and for him to accept it was pretty damn cool. And I can see Vogelsong being a coach or a PR guy or somewhere, you know, in the Giants system for many years to come.
I think he wants to get into coaching from what the talk is. I read that after he found out that he was being reassigned to the minor league camp in Minnesota, he kind of said he checked out mentally, and that's when he knew that he was done. I thought it was nice what the Giants did for him. People like almost forget that the game after Rally Zito, we had Rally Vogie. Vogie started game six of that Cardinals series in 2012. If they don't win that game, and I believe he might have gotten a hit or gotten on base during the game six. So many victories to remember, it's hard. Right? But, you know, Vogie was a real integral part of that. And his story of, you know, washing out of baseball, going over to Japan, coming back, saying he didn't want to sign with the Dodgers, he'd prefer to sign with the Giants, and then having that bounce back season in 2011, you know, that put him in that rotation for the 2012, you know, run that they had. I mean, he's one of the all-time – he's an all-time great Giant. He really is. Other teams don't get that. There was that Deadspin article ripping, you know, like, the Giants said goodbye to some guy. No, to us, he's not some guy. To the Giants organization, Ryan Vogelsong is the epitome of what it is to be, you know, a human that's a baseball player, to have to go through trouble to get to triumph and be able to experience every little bit along the way. So Vogie is – I love Vogelsong. They handled that cool. I thought that was nice. I would have liked to have seen him throw a pitch or two to a batter. I would have thought that would have been cool.
I know.
I mean, right? I don't know how Stratton would have felt about it, but, you know, I thought that would have been kind of neat just to see Vogie.
Yeah, he wouldn't have qualified for the win if – he didn't start and go five innings, so that was part of the problem there. But pretty cool stuff. So good job, Vogie. Look, I mean, it's weird because, like, when the Giants started this run back in 2009 to 2010, we always reminisced about, oh, it's the Barry Bonds years and JT Snow and Rich Aurelia and Rob Nen and, you know, John, you know, or I was about to say.
What are you going to go back to, like, John Burke?
Bill Swift and John Burke.
Yeah, John Burke and Billy Swift. Go back to those days.
Let's go back to 93 there. You know, Benito Santiago, you know, it goes on and on and on. We had no idea this team was going to be where they were from 2010 to 2016, I'm going to say, because, of course, they made the playoffs last year. That was a magical era, and I think we can all recognize as Giants fans that that window has closed. I think a year ago on this podcast, we thought it was still open. You know, they could have – who knows what would have happened against Chicago if they had not blown that three-run lead in the ninth. They would have gone back to Chicago for game five. You know, be it a win or a loss, the Giants were very competitive in that series, and they, of course, beat New York in the wild card. Point being, it's hypothetically possible they could have gone deep into the playoffs, if not have won the World Series. We don't know. We'll never know. The point being is that, you know, when you add up the second half of last year with all of this year being the worst team in all of Major League Baseball, that window has closed with a very vocal thud. And I don't think the Giants or any of their fans can think that 2018 is going to be the year that they go back to the playoffs. I'm not saying it's impossible, because we didn't think this team was going to, you know, lose 100 or come close to losing 100 games this year. Just like next year, I can't imagine this team winning 90 games. I just can't. It's just not possible. But that being said, it's an amazing run that this team has had. And I think as Giants fans, if this doesn't, you know, turn into what we want it to be next year is something that we need to, you know, reflect upon and go, hey, look, there's 30 teams in Major League Baseball. So you have a 1-in-30 chance of winning the World Series, all things being equal. And we won 3 in 5. Three that we probably will cherish for the rest of our lives. So, you know, let's just take it for what it's worth and try to move on, but also try to analyze to see what this team can do to try and get back into it in the next 5 years. But
exactly.
It's tough. And it's tough.
I'm sure we'll go more into it in the off season, but there's like questions about which direction they want to go, which guys they want to keep. There's been it came out that Bochy might be willing to look at another first baseman, meaning he'd be open to trading Belt if it were necessary. I don't remember. That was like a week ago that surfaced. And I would be too, actually. Out of all the core guys that everybody like just wants to wrap their arms around that we talk about, Posey, Bum, Crawford, Panic, and Belt, I guess. Belt is a guy I think – Panic is literally the most tradable, but I believe Belt is the most expendable out of those. Panic's, I think, showing that now. The guy's betting like 406 or 420 or something in in September so far. He's on fire. Like if you touch Joe Panic right now, you burst into flames. And so like I think, you know, they're willing to change, you know, maybe a little bit of what the base of it is, but I'm not sure they have a direction yet. You know, and I don't know if we're going to see it come together during this offseason into next season or if it's going to take another season for the full scope and idea to take shape.
So the Giants are looking at their they're going to win their 62nd game tonight, which means they only need to win one more game the rest of the year to
yeah
100 losses. So it's sad. I mean, could you have imagined, Eric? I mean, we were trying to predict, you know, their record this year at the beginning of this year, and I think the worst, I don't have it in front of me, but the worst prediction was like, you know, 88 wins or whatever.
We're so far off the mark.
Yeah. It's not even funny. But, you know, it looks like they're going to have 63, maybe 64 wins and just narrowly avoid 100 losses. But what alternate reality would you have expected this season to have occurred? Honestly, I mean, this is so in our we started this podcast in 2011 and we have never, ever had a season so far off the mark than this year. And I think most of the professionals, quote unquote, would agree that this is just such an aberration. No one can really explain it.
Well, they're 20 games worse. Like, I thought they'd win 84. I didn't think they'd make the playoffs. I feel so good about that because I've been so wrong when I think they're going to be great that I got kind of lucky when I said they'd sort of suck that they really sucked. But, like, I didn't think they were 20 games this bad. But let's be honest, there were injuries at times. And the ideal situation is that management would be a little bit better at what they're doing right now. I don't understand half the time if Bochy even is looking at players for the future or if he's just running a lineup out there. You know, you'll see somebody like Mac go 3-for-3 and homer off Kershaw and then not be in the starting lineup the next day. That's just an example because it's the last 2 days, you know, and the fact that Evans and Sabian, to another extent, didn't get the guys in place to back up left field, to bring in the right, you know, kind of hitters and players for this ballpark. So, I thought that there was a chance for them not to be good, but I didn't think it would fall apart like this. And I think that it was the blinded by the making the playoffs and being on the brink of beating the Cubs. If none of that happens, we have a much different view of this team heading into 2017. If they collapse last year and they don't make the playoffs at all, we're not all gung-ho going into this year. You know, we're critical heading into this season. We're like, you know, they couldn't get it done last year. Did they fix this? Did they fix this? You know, I think that really affected us. Like, you know, in I don't want to say a bad way, but it kind of slowed the progress of the whole organization down for like another 2 years.
Yeah, you know, five teams are in the West, and most analysts agree that it's always like the Dodgers and the Giants at the top two of the division. Well, three of the five teams look like they're going to make the playoffs this year. Now, if you told us that in the beginning of the year, I mean, come on, three out of five teams. Of course the Giants are in one of those three. I mean, there's no doubt. If someone told you the Giants or the playoffs are going to contain three teams from the West, of course you would think the Giants, because you're like, okay, one or two teams maybe, but three teams, oh my God, both wild cards, absolutely the Giants are going to be there, because there's no way they're going to be worse than, you know, the Padres and the Rockies, or the Rockies and the Diamondbacks, or the Padres and the Diamondbacks. There's no way. Not only the Giants not make the top three, they are the worst by far. Like, that's it. They're done. They're last place in the West. I mean, it's not even close to the Padres, who are also, of course, missing. It looks like it's going to be Arizona, who secured a wild card berth. And it looks like the Rockies, aside from a collapse, are going to be playing in Arizona for the wild card game. But it's just, it's crazy to think that at the beginning of this year, I would have never imagined something like this. Never. Especially with the turmoil that the Rockies and the Diamondbacks have gone through in the last couple of years.
It's just drastically different than the way things have been the last 6 years, that it's just such a harsh reality that us as Giants fans have had to go through this year. Like, all the flaws got exposed. All of them.
Can we reset? Just saying. Man, bad stuff. All right. Yes. So it looks like the Giants are going to avoid 100 losses if they get one more win after tonight. So
yeah,
we don't need to dwell on that unless they lose the rest of the games. But I don't want to get too political, but it's kind of hard to avoid because, you know, we do a podcast about Giants baseball, and baseball is part of the sports world. But Bruce Maxwell of the Oakland A's took a knee during the national anthem a couple of nights ago after President Trump's comments. And, of course, we know now how many NFL players did the same on Sunday, yesterday. So, you know, without being too offensive either way, I think, you know, I know where you lay, Eric, but, you know, how does this change the landscape of Major League Baseball if other players are going to follow in Bruce's suit here?
I think it only changes the landscape for fans. I don't think it changes it for players or managers, especially with Bruce Maxwell being the first guy to kneel during the anthem. People are finding out why he did it. Both Susan Slusser and Jeff Passan have really good articles out there about Bruce Maxwell's story and why he felt the need to do that, but still put his hand over his heart. And I will say that I am somebody who I'm all for his right to kneel. You know, that is not a moment in his professional life where he has to be focused on his professional game. And so if in that moment, and it's not in his contract, and I don't think any of these guys in any of the professional sports have it in their contract, if it's not, as something they could do, if it is something that they are free to do, they should just be allowed to do it. And I don't think it's going to cause any widespread kneeling in baseball. I'm not sure. We may not see another thing in baseball, you know, this season. Part of that is that baseball, and the reason people are kneeling for the national anthem, is to bring attention to certain inner city communities and to certain violence towards, you know, it's been a racial issue basically. And Major League Baseball only has 7% black players. So it's a little harder for something like that to filter through into our sport than it was for football and basketball, which are made up by a majority of black players. You know, baseball isn't. So I don't think we're going to see much of it. And any blowback that any fan has towards a baseball team, I mean, that's you choosing your own beliefs over enjoyment and entertainment of a sport that you've loved your entire life. You know, that's the part I don't get, is people are taking the issue and changing it. And so I don't have a problem with it coming over to our sport. I really don't. I don't think it's going to be a distraction. You know, I brought up the point, you remember 20 years ago, Chris Martin came into the NBA, and then he changed his name to, like, Sharif Abdul Rahim. And then during the national anthem, he would either turn around or he put his hands over his face. You know, it's no different to me than that. Regardless if I agree with why he's doing that, he has the right to do it because we live in America and we are Americans. And as citizens, we are afforded those rights.
Yeah, and so that's the thing that, you know, kind of bugs me is, if I was an NFL player, because that's where this is occurring right now, I would choose to stand and, you know, put the hand over my heart and sing the song. But those who choose to not do that, I have no problem with. And the reason is because of the country that this is founded upon. I mean, the principles that we have fought for, that our forefathers and our brothers and sisters and fathers and mothers and brothers have fought for. It's for the fact that you can do whatever the hell you want during the national anthem. Now, can someone interpret those motives as, you know, nefarious? Yeah, fine. If you want to go ahead and think that, that's your right. But I choose to believe that most of the men who kneel during the anthem, they're not trying, they're not stating, they're not intentionally discrediting or disavowing or disrespecting the flag or the country. They're not. They're using this as a platform to raise awareness for racial inequality and social injustice for mostly African Americans and what they've been going through in terms of police brutality and targeting and profiling and all those things. I'm a white male, you know, middle class, raised, went to college, you know, went to graduate school. I earn a decent salary. I do this podcast. I am not the person to sit here and claim that I've been wronged by America. Not at all. But I totally, totally understand those who are standing up for those who have been oppressed. And I know a lot of people out there are saying that it's offensive, and that's their right. That's fine. I, in a lot of ways, I understand it because, you know, my dad served 2 tours in Vietnam, and he led a lot of 18-year-olds into battle, and many of them died. And he was originally a Republican. He's now a Democrat. But that being, you know, said, he totally is for the NFL players doing what they're doing right now, because he fought for that right. And that's what his point is. He fought for the right for people to express their opinions in any fashion that they want. And the reality is, if you're not hitting someone or taking something away or infringing upon their rights or doing something physically or emotionally to them, then how does it affect you? And that's the thing that bugs me about it, is I can understand someone being offended by an NFL player kneeling during the national anthem. They think it's offending them. It's you know, disrespecting, you know, their service or their father's service or their mother's service or their brother's service or any service to the flag or the flag itself in the, you know, the founding of this country. That's fine. I get that. I really do. But the fact of the matter is, if you didn't see that player do that, you wouldn't know about it, and it wouldn't have affected you in any other way. Unlike the actual social injustice that is going on, in which they're standing up for. And we're talking about, you know, the shootings and the racial profiling and the inequalities in America. So I know a lot of people say, oh, well, what's next? You know, the next player is going to say, oh, I'm going to kneel because my shoes aren't shined in the correct way. And it's just, you know, it's that whole slippery slope kind of argument, which never bears fruit. It really doesn't. It's just like, oh, they're going to take away all our guns. No, that's not going to happen. The Constitution protects all of us. So until we actually see NFL players or other sports athletes kneeling for ridiculous reasons other than what's going on right now, I'm going to go ahead and give them a pass and say, you know what? I get it. It's okay. It doesn't affect me. Doesn't affect you. It's purely PR. And guess what? It's getting the conversation out there. It's exactly what they're trying to do. It's not like me kneeling during the national anthem at work. You know, I mean, three people are going to see it. It doesn't have the same effect. So that's why these players are doing it.
The effect, like, it's not like you're not kneeling to bring awareness to I mean, it sounds weird, but like, if you were to be doing it to bring awareness to like narwhals being endangered, right. You know, then that would be ridiculous. But their reasoning, and the thing is in this debate, the reasoning gets bastardized and changed by those who haven't had to go through their own struggles and their own problems, because it's hard to relate to that. And so many people don't understand why they would feel the need to bring attention to something that they may not be engulfed in anymore. You know, it's like saying to somebody, you know, oh, you're not homeless anymore, so you don't have to fight for homeless rights. You know, forget about all the rest of the people that are still homeless. Now that you're good, you don't have to, you know, look after them.
No, exactly.
And that's all these guys are trying to do, is bring awareness to something about where they came from.
Yeah, a lot of the counterintelligence has been, you know, why are multimillionaires protesting this? You know, and it's like, well, think about where many of them came from. I think about how many of their friends, family, and relatives are still there. That's why they're doing this.
Right.
And for people to not understand that, I tell you this, I don't think I've seen a single tweet or Facebook post or text or personal message from someone who's really destitute, down and out, been oppressed, has no money, who says, oh, screw these guys. It's all of those opinions are coming from people who are living in very comfortable positions. And that's the irony of it. It's like, okay, look, these guys are living in comfortable positions like you, or even in better positions than you. I get it. But they're trying to fight for people that they live with or strive for or came from. And that's the whole point. And again, let's get down to the brass tacks. If someone kneels during the national anthem, how does it affect you in a negative way? It doesn't do anything. In fact, before 2009, NFL players were in the locker room during the national anthem. So the fact that they're out and in public during the anthem for the last 8 years, how does that change anything? I mean, really, Eric? I mean, I'm being honest here. It's stupid. It's not doing anything to anyone. It's not hurting them. It's not calling them out. It's not taking money away. It's not taking their rights away. It's not doing anything. It's just, it's a facade. It's an image. But people get upset. Just like someone burning the American flag. How does that affect you? It doesn't. But people get upset. And it's weird how this country has evolved into this. You know, you must stand up for the national anthem. You must not do this. You must do this. And I'm fine with anything under the Constitution as long as it doesn't hurt me or my family. And so I'm fine with
it. Yeah, that's like to me, though, that's like a bottom line in life. You know what I mean? Like, I'll let you do what you want to do. Just let me do what I want to do, you know, as long as we're all good on all the other fronts. And my last thought on this, and we can shift back into our lovable loser Giants. I am not equipped, nor do I think anybody else is, to tell other people how to be patriotic. Not it is all of it's up to each one of us individually to decide whether or not we feel something is acceptable or not, or whether or not we feel strongly enough about something. There's no way any one person can tell another person how to feel, how to go about showing their pride about things. And that's like such a key to this. You know, it's people get into this debate and they're all just distracted by the mass propaganda machine that is a certain whirlwind, and could have used that name this year, but would have worked, but you know, nobody can tell anybody else how to be patriotic, so no. like you just said, it's you know, as long as you take care of yourself, you know, everything will be fine. This is not gonna, you know, make or break whether food gets put on your table. This isn't gonna make or right, you know, and if you decide you want to stop watching a sport because a few players in that sport decided to protest, well, honestly, you know, I don't want to call you names, but that's your decision.
Your decision. It's fine.
I don't understand that.
No one's stopping you.
I don't understand that. I've had a hard time with football lately because of CTE, but I love watching football, and I love watching my Bears especially. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to suddenly stop watching the Bears because three guys might do a protest during a part of the game that doesn't even affect the outcome of the game. How does, you know, it's like you said, how does that affect me? It doesn't. It just makes no sense to me. Stop rooting for the Giants for some reason? No. The only way I could stop rooting for the Giants is if it turned out like Larry Bear was a murderer and he started collecting the hides of ex-Giants and hiding them in his basement. And he had a whole wall full of mantles of ex-Giants. That's the only way I could stop being a Giants fan. And even then, it's iffy.
Oh, dude, that's awesome. Okay, so let's talk about this coming week. Look, you know, they're winning tonight. They have a couple games left in Arizona, and then they come back home for three. And that's the end of the season. We know the Giants don't have any postseason. Obviously, that ship has long since sailed. Matt Cain is purported to get a start in one of these games in the last three against San Diego. So I don't know which game it's going to be, but I'm going to go to Saturday's game. I hope to see him there, but I mean, what are your thoughts, man? I mean,
I hope he gets
a start. I was
talking
earlier about the conclusion of this window, the closing of this window, and even though it was firmly closed 6 months ago, this is one of the players that is kind of like the crazy glue at the end of that, you know, window. It's like, yeah, we're putting the crazy glue on now. Don't even try to open it up because this guy's gone. This guy was so instrumental to not only the three world championships and, you know, his perfect game and all the other things that he did, but he's the longest tenured Giant. He's the only Giant to have played with, you know, Barry Bonds on the current roster. 2005, man. 12 years. 12 years.
It's a long time ago now.
I mean, think about it. Like, he started in 2005. 12 years before that is 1993. That's when, you know, Barry Bonds signed with the Giants.
Wow.
Try to put it in context of that. He's been around with the Giants as long as, you know, Barry Bonds almost was with the Giants in totality. It's crazy. But, you know, we owe a lot to this guy. And it's sad that, you know, he's unfortunately, you know, had such a big downturn in his career. And I don't necessarily see him hooking up with a team next year, but so what kind of send-off do you think the Giants are going to have for him this
weekend? I hope they let him start a game like you said, and I hope it's Saturday, because if you're going Saturday, that'd be fantastic timing. It's different with Matt for all the reasons you're saying. It's just like Timmy was the guy that gave us hope that the whole thing could be different. You know, Kane was already here, but Timmy was like the guy, you know, and then Bum came along and he became the guy. So like Kane never, as much as he was our horse, he was never like the consistent number one in everybody else's eyes. It sounds weird, but you know, Timmy was the number one in 2010 and 2012 Kane was, I guess you could say he was the number one because of the perfect game, but it's just, it's different than like when Zito had his, you know, farewell, when Vogie had his farewell, you know, even the last bits of Timmy, it's just different with Kane because he was through everything. He saw the home run record. He saw horrible seasons turn into, you know, he was there when Pablo was a rookie. You know what I mean? He saw all those things. When Pablo probably caught, I think, a few games back when he was a rookie.
I saw him in San Jose myself.
It's just, no. That's so weird. Like, Kane
as a catcher,
played,
by the way. Yeah,
right.
As a catcher.
You know, so his is different. Kane, like, it's going to be really hard to see him in a different uniform if he catches on with somebody next year. And he strikes me as the kind of guy that might push himself and to do it just to see if he could still do it. But it's different than saying goodbye to the other guys. Like, Kane deserves his own, like, plaque on the wall. Like, Bonds just got his plaque on the wall. Like, Kane should get his would the season end Sunday? Kane should get his on the wall on Monday, you know? That's how much he meant to the Giants organization during this time. Because he was, during the peak of it, he pitched all three clinchers in 2012. He was the starting pitcher for Game 5, Game 7, and Game 4.
He was, I mean, honestly, an incredible legacy to this guy. I mean, we think a lot of him now, but in 10, 20, 30 years, when the Giants bring back all of these teams from, oh, it's the 2010 championship team, the 2014, the whatever. Kane's going to be in the mix of all of them. And
yeah.
I think we really need to think deeply about his contribution because without him, there's no way they have, you know, two of these three championships. Maybe one of them without him. But he's been so important to all three. Despite the fact that, you know, a couple of years he was, you know, injured and whatever, but he was valuable in the playoffs. So, pretty incredible. Well, it's just weird. I mean, Eric, I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, like, since we started this podcast in 2011, obviously I didn't start it with Eric. Or sorry, shouldn't say Eric.
So, yes.
with Willie and Ben. Everything's been, you know, so good since then, despite the 2011 season, the 2013 season, and the 2015 season. Nothing has been like this year. This has absolutely been the worst year since the existence of this podcast. And it's odd to say that the Giants are, you know, the worst or the second worst team in all of Major League Baseball. But, you know, the fact of the matter is we are here and we're acknowledging this, but Giants need to move on, man. They need to replace a lot of their talent that they've had over the few years. And, you know, they've struck it rich with your Pat Burrells and
Cody Ross.
Yeah, your Cody Rosses and things like that. Michael Morris's. Those things aren't going to always happen. And so we need to, you know, the Giants need to build that core talent, I guess, of players. But it's crazy to think that, you know, the Giants are just, you know, less than 3 years removed from a world championship here sitting at, you know, the worst team in baseball. But,
well, here's the thing. When you're old and gray and a grandpa and your grandkid sees a game and some guy on the Giants loses 1-0, pitches a beautiful game, and all of a sudden you're like, oh man, he got caned, and your grandson says, what do you mean he got caned? You get to talk about Matt Cain. You get to tell stories about Matt Cain. That's the kind of thing he means to this franchise. He was like a he was like your brother, but he's also your son, but you know what I mean? He was that kind of guy. He was always there, always worked hard, and you could always depend on him. Regardless of what the team did around him, you could always depend on him to put in his work and give his best.
No, good point, man. Getting caned. I mean, yep. He has a euphemism now that yep. will forever live in Giants lore.
Yeah.
So a couple of weeks ago, Cleveland extended their winning streak to 22 games, which, man, that was fun to watch. It was such a playoff atmosphere, and that, of course, Cleveland just narrowly missed number 23, but 22 in itself was incredible because they were down to their last strike. They pushed it to extra innings and they won it. But, I mean, is that what we're missing, Eric, right now in terms of Giants baseball? Something like that? I mean, that's just, wow, 22 wins in a row. Who's done that?
The Giants of 1914. Other than them, nobody.
102 years ago.
Oh my God, yeah. I was ready to. I've argued the validity of that streak, but I mean, it's crazy. It's a fantastic and fun thing, you know. Being in the Bay Area, Oakland did it back in 2002, I believe it was the Moneyball year when Hattieburg hit the
20 wins. Yep.
Yeah, you know, and they fizzled out. And I'm not saying that Cleveland's going to fizzle out, but like it takes a lot of effort to win every single game. Like, you kind of have to get that extra juice going every single time. So you got to hope it doesn't, like, kind of blow them out in the long run. But, I mean, I couldn't imagine how we'd be feeling if the Giants won 22 straight games. I really can't. You know, I was trying to grasp it, talking to Indians fans that I know. And I don't know how we'd be feeling. I was at Epcot the night after it got to 22. And we went into Mexico to get on this ride, the Three Caballeros. It rides around. It's like a boat ride in Disney World, you know, in the Epcot. And this guy saw my other half's Cubs shirt, and he immediately said to her, he's like, oh, my God. It's like, nice shirt. But he's like, hey, our 22 in a row, yada, yada, yada. And all he did is kept talking up this 22 in a row. And by the end of the ride, which he annoyed us mercilessly, Karen could smile with her Cubs shirt, and I could point out that the Giants in 54 beat the Indians, who had won 111 games that year, in such a runaway fashion, and, you know, that the Indians hadn't won since 48. And you know, it kind of still stung, because as great as 22 wins in a regular season is going to be, we're going to talk about it for years, but if the Indians don't win the title, they're going to kind of feel, you know, a little disappointed anyways. They might even blame the streak, you know? But, like, if it were going on with the Giants, I'd be like, I don't care. Win 23, win 24, win every game, you know? I mean, you get caught up into it. You have to. I watched the end of that 22nd game, too, where it was down to the strike, and then Lindor hit it off the wall with a swing that, like, no Giants player seems to understand how to inside out the ball. And how winning teams play. And, you know, it was exciting. The Indians fans were caught up in it, you know. And we can't say Cleveland, you know, needs something to cheer for anymore, because, you know, they won a title now. But it's fun to see, you know. It's fun to see, and I know we'd be caught up in it. But I love anomalies like that. They make baseball seasons like this because the Giants, I've said it like six times, the Giants suck so much. You know, things like the Indians win streak are great little distractions during the season. You know, we get to see cool stuff and be happy for them.
Yeah, after, you know, 2010, so we're talking about 2011, 13, 15, and now, of course, this year. But every playoff year, Eric, and I don't know how you've been, you know, my whole office is decorated with Giants gear. I live and breathe and die with the Giants, and unfortunately, that comes with a bunch of psychological baggage. And what that entails is when they get to the playoffs, I get to a point where I get very disturbed if they lose. And it's hard for me to even watch a game because I think, oh, they're definitely going to lose. They're definitely going to lose. And if they lose, then I'm going to be upset. And if I'm upset, then I'm going to, you know, yada, 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 yada. And I've done that with 3 years of World Championship Baseball, assuming the worst and expecting the worst and actually getting the best. So that just seems to reinforce my proclivity to such problems. This year, however, you know the Giants aren't doing anything in the playoffs. They've been eliminated a long time ago. So it opens the door to actually enjoying playoff baseball objectively. So, I mean, where do you lean in terms of, you know, rooting for the teams that are still, you know, in the hunt? And how do you enjoy that despite the fact that the Giants aren't going to be in the playoffs?
Well, I obviously have the built-in Cubs. We've talked about it here. Everybody knows from Chicago. It's funny because I want to, like, root for the Diamondbacks so bad. I really do. Like, Goldschmidt, we've watched Goldschmidt play for years. We know that guy deserves some recognition. You know what I mean? We've seen that team. They beat the crap out of the Giants this year. You know, they not tonight, obviously, because they're hungover because they clinched the playoffs yesterday. But, you know, like, I'd love to root for the D-backs, you know. And it's not even a division thing or anything like that. It's just, it's nice to see, you know, some of the players that we've seen over the last. Gregor Blanco is a Diamondback. I'd love to see him again. You know, rooting interests tend to go to players for me when the Giants are totally out of it. And, you know, we don't even have to sweat anything. I think I want to pull for Cleveland also because they lost last year. But, I mean, like, it's still the American League, and I don't really totally care. Like, I really don't. I'm not going to lie. Like, I have no idea if the Astros or Indians are better. I have no clue. But okay. I think we're going to find out.
I'm not going to school you either. So, you know.
Right. You know, so, the Yankees look like a decent team. If they can beat the Twins in their wild card game, I kind of would root for the Yankees because I've got friends that are Yankees fans. But they're the Yankees, and I grew up hating the Yankees, so screw the Yankees, you know? So it's kind of a process of elimination thing, you know? So it's the Cubs for sure. And then beyond that, it's kind of players. Like, you know, you want to see people do good things. See new heroes, storylines that we don't expect.
Okay, so no Houston. Cubs this year. They're done. Yeah.
Houston, well, right. That's the thing with. Is nobody wants to see the Cubs. So, like, I mean, I can't. I mean, who really wants to see the Nats? Do you want to see the Nats in the World Series? Do you want to see
Dusty
in the World Series? I mean, who the hell wants that?
No.
All right. So we don't want the Dodgers to get there either as Giants fans.
Oh, hell no. So,
right. So we're left with the winner of the D-backs Rockies game to root for as Giants fans. Because we don't want to root for Dusty. We don't want to root for the Cubs. We don't want to root for the Dodgers.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're not wrong. Oh, man. I mean, the Rockies have zero world championships. You know, the Diamondbacks have a couple, right? So it's like, okay, if an NL team's going to win it, why not the Rockies? You know? Whatever.
The hell?
Anyway.
It's like 2007? The Rockies and the Diamondbacks faced each other in the NLCS. Yeah. Like, who the hell watched that east of the Grand Canyon? Like, who cared?
Like, three people. Like, literally. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, nobody cared. So, as Giants fans, we gotta kind of root for the teams out west to stay relevant.
All right, so Aaron Judge, you know, he's had a bad second half, but he's picked it up lately, and he broke Mark McGwire's rookie home run record with his 49th and 50 home runs today. He has a few games left, so, you know, is this good for baseball? I mean, we haven't even talked about the fact that the Giants, not the Giants, Major League Baseball has set a record for home runs in a season this year. So, I mean, is it the juice? Is it the park? Is it the baseball? I mean, what's going on right now?
Well, it's not the Giants because the Giants, I believe it's Belt. I'm looking it up. I believe Brandon Belt still, yes, he
18,
does.
18, right?
18 home runs. He leads by 4. He hasn't played since, like, August 3rd.
It's bad.
It's been almost 2 full months. He's done for the season. And here's this barrage of homers. Teams are hitting like six and seven guys are hitting 20 home runs on a team. And Brandon Belt leads the Giants with 18, and he hasn't played for almost 2 months.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it's sad. It's cool seeing what Judge did. I'm glad that his swing didn't totally get screwed up. Anytime Mark McGwire gets wiped out of the record books, I'm happy. I never liked that guy. I don't know what it was. I just never did. He didn't bring me back to baseball. I was already with baseball. You know, so. But, like, the Giants need to get on board with this whole people hitting home runs thing. Because that's how they're all winning games.
That's how you're winning games, Giants. I mean, Nick, come on.
Right. Nick Hundley hit a three-run homer tonight. Wow, that was so helpful. You know, one swing, three runs. Instead of, you know, two guys get on and then just, you know, one guy gets sacrificed over, then it gets sacrificed in, and then you're out of the inning. And six guys are batted so you can get one run. We need less of that and more of the dink dunk, boom. So I the homers are up. I don't know if it's juice. I think it's the baseballs. I do. I think it's the baseballs. I think they're tighter.
I think
the Giants, think so except in San Francisco, apparently they get different shipments.
So Brandon Crawford had a funny at bat yesterday against Clayton Kershaw. So what happened there, Eric?
Oh, okay, God, you saw it though, right?
Yeah. Fantastic.
Crawford squared to bunt against Kershaw, and he got his feet tangled and basically fell forward towards the mound. And had it been a curveball, he could have taken that right to the face. But he didn't, and it was hilarious. It was absolutely hilarious. Like, I saw it for the first time, and I burst out laughing. I didn't realize it was going to be that funny. As somebody who has squared to bunt and made sure my feet are set, because you know how we were all taught how to bunt when we were younger and make sure your feet, you know, you turn them in a way, which way. You know, he obviously just got caught up trying to run out of the box because it was a drag bunt ahead of time and went splat. Like, you notice the catcher, like, sat there for a second. You know what I mean? He just kind of let Crawford gather himself.
Yeah. What was great is the fact that, you know, catcher obviously knew what was going on, but the fact of the matter is, you know, he tripped over himself, and someone called him out on Twitter and did the slow-mo replay of his stumble, and Crawford responded with Homer Simpson going back into the bushes, which is just great. I mean, it just shows you how playful these players can be. You know, Brandon Crawford has, you know, thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of fans watching him, you know, fall on his face. And when he's called out by a fan, he can own it and, you know, just call it out saying, yep, I did it. And I'm just going to disappear into the bushes.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, because we know he heard about it, you know, yesterday, and I'm sure he heard about it today from the guys. But in an otherwise, like, horrible season, especially for Crawford and the ups and downs he's had to endure, both personal and on the field, that's going to be one of the things he remembers, is tripping and falling on his face against Kershaw.
Oh, hell
and
yeah.
he'll laugh about it as time moves on. He might chuckle about it now. Nobody will see it, but, you know, it's good that he has that kind of mentality, and at least that ball players have that kind of mentality in general, I think.
No, it's good stuff. So, Eric, you want to talk about Puerto Rico and Maria?
Yeah, we're going to wrap up here soon. I just want to point out, you know, Maria hit Puerto Rico, and Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory. This isn't like a foreign country. And so these are U.S. citizens that have been displaced. They lost their power. I mean, it's crazy. I see a lot in Central Florida. We have a very big Puerto Rican community, and Major League Baseball has gotten involved, and they've set up some charities. So, you know, I urge people to donate. Carlos Beltran, I want to highlight especially. He started a fund to get relief help and immediately put $1 million in the fund. He didn't wait around, and it's funny because Major League Baseball also put a fund and put $1 million in the fund. But like Belchon's, like, you know, Javi Baez of the Cubs has something going. So I know that a lot of the Puerto Rican community is banding together in baseball, and baseball is one of the few sports. Like, I can't think of Puerto Ricans playing hockey, football, or basketball off the top of my head. Anyway, you know, it's the one sport that, you know, helps tie them, you know, together. You know, and those guys are a band of brothers in the clubhouses. We saw it with, you know, the blonde hair and the World Baseball Classic. So you remember how much fun those guys were to watch baseball. Think about that when you're, you know, think about donating and helping out. So, you know, Carlos Beltran, I said, had a good charity, and I'm sure also always the Red Cross is a great place to donate.
Awesome, Eric. So, you know, pretty glad that you're safe after what happened.
I'm so fortunate, man. Like, you have no idea.
About every what was day, going on.
Yeah, every day is a gift at this point. It's awesome.
No, it's awesome, man. So I know we only have like a few days left in the Giants season. Looks like they might just avoid 100 losses, so we're going to go ahead and record next week. Look, there's many more important things than what we're doing here recording about Giants baseball in terms of you know, the Hurricanes and, of course, the issues with the flag and racial inequality, and, you know, we're definitely behind that. But, you know, if you want to go ahead and send us any comments or questions, go ahead and do that at mail@torturecast.com. And we're going to go ahead and read those on air. If you want to email us or tweet at us individually, you can do so at chad@torturecast.com. You can do Eric at 2OutHits and, you know, Willie at Willie Dills. And, sorry, Ben. I'm like blanking out right now. I'm trying to, my kid.
The other guy room, by that's the way. Sometimes here.
Yeah, my son came in the room, so that's why I'm having an issue right now. Anyway, at Fried Duck, that's with two D's. Anyway, go ahead and tweet at us or email us your issues, and we'll for sure go ahead and read those online.
Let me say this. I want to say to the listeners of this podcast that have made it through 2017 with us, thank you for sticking with us. If you've made it this far into the podcast, I thank you even more and love you from the bottom of my heart for doing that. It's been a long, trying season as Giants fans, and we've all had to deal with that in the midst of like all this. It's a shame the Giants were not a positive distraction for us in 2017. So I really appreciate the listeners out there and the downloads and people that keep coming back and do want to hear our opinions on the Giants. I appreciate them for sticking around.
No, it's been incredible. You guys have been absolutely awesome. So thank you so much for all of your dedication. We will try and do what we can do for 2017 and 2018. So for Eric and for Willie and Ben, this is Chad signing off for episode 1 million. We'll see you next time. We'll see you next time, and we'll do it again. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.